Hello, this is Rabbi Jeffrey Sachs of Atid and Web Yeshiva with another installment of our series on the Rambam's Shmona Prakim, tonight looking at the first chapter. If you're listening to an MP3 recording of this shiur, you're missing the full interactive online experience, which can be participated in live or through interactive archives, available only at webyeshiva.org. Please visit us there for our full array of interactive online courses, classes, and shiurim. Okay, good evening, everyone. Let me just turn on the recorder here. If you have a webcam, you can hit send video so that we can see you. And again, like I said, if you don't have a webcam, go get yourself a webcam. if you have a microphone, you'll be able to speak up, and I'd like to hear from you, actually. Right now, you're muted, but if you'd like to speak up, signal me somehow through the chat box or by hitting the raise hand button, and we'll be able to pass you the mic. Last time we looked at the introduction to the Rambam's Shmona Prakim, the eight chapters, which again, just very quick summary, is a freestanding essay that he writes by way of introduction to his commentary on Pirkei Avot. And it is the Rambam's personality theory, since Pirkei Avot again deals with questions of ethics, of morals, of personal development. The Rambam feels it's necessary to give you some background to how he thinks all of those things play themselves out. The Rambam is based on an assumption that since a human being is, at least in theory, capable of reaching very high spiritual heights, the pinnacle of which is nivuah, prophecy. Prophecy is the result of having developed yourself, refined yourself so much so that automatically the channels open up and you start receiving divine communication. For most prophets, for most nevi'im, it's not a... It's not like we have nowadays. We have, a high-speed internet connection. It's kind of like it used to be in the old days. Some of us must be old enough to remember that, where everybody had dial-up, where you would be on your computer, you'd write emails, you'd save them in the outbox, and then twice a day you'd connect to the internet and you'd download new email and you'd send whatever had accumulated in your outbox. I'm sure some of you must remember those old dark ages. So for most Nevi'im, it was like dial-up. There was the capacity to receive Nevuah, but it wasn't an open channel. For Moshe Rabbeinu, it's high-speed internet access to the divine. And that's a kind of a very different experience. That's why the Rambam actually counts, even though the Rambam believes that for the Rambam, belief in Nivuah, belief in prophecy, is one of the 13 cardinal principles of faith. But belief that Moshe had a unique form of prophecy is an additional cardinal principle of faith. It's a second one of the 13 principles of faith for the Rambam. So since for the Rambam, the human being is capable of achieving this, even though, of course, the overwhelming majority of human beings throughout history have not achieved it, but since it's at least a theoretical possibility, how does that come about? It comes about through a refining and perfecting of the personality, what we call today the personality. For the Rambam, it's what the Rambam calls the nefesh. So that the first chapter here becomes something of a discussion of defining what is this idea of a nefesh. of what we generally translate as soul. I'll translate it as soul, but it's important to keep in mind that the Rambam is using it in a very particular manner. And if you haven't had a chance to look ahead, either at the Hebrew text or the English translations that are available out there, one of which I sent you a link to is available online. You may be surprised to discover that for the Rambam, there are certain components or characteristics of the nefesh, which we don't generally think of as, which we don't generally think of as spiritual. These include having lunch. To a certain degree, as we'll see in a few minutes. The nefesh is for the Rambam, as it is for most medieval philosophers, the non-physical element of being a person. Again, it's what we it's parallel to what we in contemporary parlance call the personality. You know, it's the part of me which I can't point to. Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan has a lovely essay. If you don't know who Aryeh Kaplan is, Google him. You'll find he was a very, very creative thinker and writer, and author. NCSY in the old days used to publish his books, sometimes his little pamphlets that were very popular in the old days when I was a kid in NCSY. And yes, Adam, he was very prolific. He unfortunately tragically died pretty young. If you Google him, you'll find plenty of information on him. And on Amazon, you'll be able to see all the books. He has this wonderful little book called If You Were God, which is a pamphlet that has, I think, three essays in it. One is this title essay, If You Were God. The other is a very interesting essay on this question, what in contemporary philosophy is called the mind-body problem. You know, we're physical beings, we have bodies, but we're also sentient spiritual beings with a mind. And he asks the question there, who is the real you? The title of the essay is The Real You. And he starts it with I'm looking around my library to see if I can't find it to pull it off the shelf. Thank you, Alan, for posting the link. He starts off with this he starts off with this experiment where he says, okay, close your eyes. You're welcome to participate in the experiment now with us. So close your eyes and point to yourself. So he says most people will point to their chest. Some people will point, you know, to their head, which might be a way for them to symbolically represent the idea that the real them is somehow captured in the ether, the cloud that exists in the gray matter. But even that is not the real you. The real you is this abstract notion of the nefesh. So for the Rambam, that's what this is. And again, it kind of corresponds to what we call the personality. The entire makeup of what makes you, you. He starts off by telling us, the Rambam, da. Oh, first of all, interestingly, I mentioned we colloquially call this work the Shmona Prakim because it has eight chapters, and it's not that the Rambam, you know, wasn't good at coming up with titles. He didn't call it the Shmona Prakim. That's what it's, he called it, the Hakdama or the Mavo lePirkei Avot, the introduction to Pirkei Avot. But he did give titles or headlines to each of the eight chapters. Which he doesn't do elsewhere. He doesn't do that in the Mor Nevuchim. The Mor Nevuchim chapters are just called by numbers. So this, the first chapter, its title is called "Benefesh Ha'adam VeKochoteha," the soul of a person and its strengths or its characteristics or its capacities. Da, you should know, ki nefesh ha'adam nefesh achat, that a person only has one soul. Vela pe'ulot rabot chalukot. But that soul has multifaceted components to it. It does different things. Yikru ketzata pe'ulot hahen nifashot. And those actions are called souls. There are different. The Rambam is pointing out that there's a linguistic problem, that we talk about souls in different in plural, to talk about the different components of the soul, but really they are just different factions or factors that go into one unified soul. And the Rambam feels it's necessary to make this point that we each of us only have one soul. But because of this, because we talk about or we think about there being different components to the personality, so I'm not here talking about multiple personality theory, whether that exists or doesn't exist beyond, you know, being a good plot device for various movies and television shows. But for the Rambam, the idea that there are different components to your personality, it doesn't mean that you have different souls. Or it's like you could imagine a child, acting out, being very cranky. It could also be an adult. And they get sent to their room, and then they've calmed down, and they come back, and they'll say something like, "That bad person is gone, and the good person is back." Whether we mean that, I assume that when a person says something like that, they're speaking again only metaphorically. But that idea that there are different, people that inhabit us, different personalities, we mean that there are different sides to the personality. Now, that's not exactly what the Rambam is talking about here, but by way of analogy, it can help us understand what he's getting at. And because of that, we tend to think that there are different souls, nefeshot rabot. Kemo shechoshvim harufim, like the doctors tell us. Ad shepatach rosh harufim v'amar shenafoshot shalosh. So the Rambam points out that there was a notion in medicine, and this was developed by the Rosh HaRofim, the head of all doctors, the doctor in chief, which many commentaries on the Shmona Prakim thought here that the Rambam was talking about Hippocrates, the founder of Western medicine. Greek Hippocrates, I think he lived in the 3rd or 4th century before zero. It's, on his name that we talk about the Hippocratic Oath. But apparently this is not. Apparently, subsequently, they found the original text that this is referring to, and he's referring to Galen, who was, although he lived a couple hundred years later, I think Galen lived in the 2nd century CE, after zero. Galen was a Roman physician and was, of course, also a very, very significant figure in the history of medicine. And the Rambam, of course, as a physician, was familiar with all of this. And he says that Galen had posited that there were three nifashot, that inside of us there were three nifashot. And without going into too many details about this theory, which the Rambam is coming to reject, but he had this idea that there was the nefesh hativit, chiyunit, and nafshit. Now, these terms which we're reading, these are the Hebrew terms translated back to us from the Arabic that the Rambam wrote them in, which were taken from the Greek that Galen wrote them in. So the terms have come to mean different things. But essentially, it goes something like this. Essentially, it goes something like this. That again, this is the idea that the Rambam is working against. That there are three different souls, distinct souls. The physical soul, the chiyunit, the vital soul, that causes the animus, that causes the movement, and the nafshit, or the psychic soul. And the idea that was put forth by Galen was that you can look and you can see that there are three forms of life. There's vegetation, there's animal, and there's people. Vegetation has physical life. I mean, it is alive. It's botanologically alive. It grows. It takes in nutrients. It processes them, etc., etc., etc. But that's it. Animal life, which is everything that's not a plant and not a human being, has the same physical life as the plants, but it also has chiyuniyut. It's live in a different way than a cabbage is alive. It moves, it thinks, although it may not have rational capacities. It forms community, it interacts. There's some level of communication. That's animals. But people have an even higher component, and therefore they are in possession of all three, and that's the nefesh hanafshit, which obviously sounds redundant, but it is the psychic soul, that we have a psychology, that we have a personality, and we have rational capacities that other creatures do not have. I'll skip ahead a few lines. That's the idea, which seems to have been a common idea that the Rambam is coming to act against, that there are different souls within us. No, according to the Rambam, there's only one soul. Just curious what you think. Why might the Rambam feel very strongly to make this point that we each of us have only one soul with different components? I mean, what's the difference? Is it just a semantic difference to say that we have one soul with different components, or to say that no, that the different components are really individual souls? What's the difference? Why is this important to the Rambam to make this point? Adam, let me turn on your microphone. Yeah, go ahead, Adam. What do you have to say?
My first thought would be that the Rambam does not want to entertain the idea of multiplicity when it comes to ephemeral items like nefesh, because that could have implications for other theological issues.
Like what?
I
mean, not necessarily. I understand the point to say, well, if we have different nefashot, so maybe they correspond to different gods. But he could also say, I accept, this is not what he says, of course, but he could say, Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad, there is, of course, only one God, but he created man with these different, what difference does it say whether you have three or you have 1 + 1 + 1, which is basically, to give an analogy, basically what he's saying here.
Well, I'm not going to back up my position too much of what you say, but I wasn't thinking in terms of parts of the nefesh corresponding to different gods. I was thinking of the god itself being potentially Trinitarian or...
Oh, I see. It's the number three. Don't withdraw your thought. Don't withdraw any thought. And do you think it's because of the number three is particularly touchy?
I know Rambam wasn't especially concerned about Christian theology or Islamic.
Right.
Still,
right.
The association it brings to me.
Right. Could be. Could be. Anybody else have any other ideas of why the Rambam might have been so feel necessary to make this point? So, and I think it's possible that just this notion that a person has different souls is, again, just to go back to like, the cheap plot device of so many TV lawyerly shows or movies. If a person can say, I didn't really do it. I'm not really responsible. It was, I'm possessed by a different personality. I have multiple personality disorder. And it creates this, possibility for you to outsource blame. To say that, only one third of my nefesh is responsible for that. For the Rambam, this was not a possibility. Kind of like the idea of like also remember when you were a kid in the cartoons, a person's trying to make a decision, and on one shoulder he's got the angel, and on one shoulder he's got the devil, and they're debating it out, and either he flicks off the angel or he flicks off the devil, and either does or doesn't do the right thing. That idea that we can, outsource our conscience, and or be able to say that I'm not really responsible for my actions because it's not the whole of me, is an idea which would be very much out of sync with his entire view of man's task in the world. If you've studied anything from Hilchot Tshuva, for example, you'll know that this resonates with the Rambam, with what the Rambam has to say over there in Hilchot Tshuva. This idea that no, you have one neshama, you have one nefesh, you're responsible for it. If you can reap the rewards of your mitzvot and your good deeds and your successes, but you're also ultimately responsible for anything you do wrong. And this idea that to say, well, no, it was this part of me, not that part of me. No, there's only one part of you. That being said, you might have different components to you. You might have different pieces, but it's all one organic whole. Va'ata yodea, he goes on to say, shetikun hamidot. I got a couple of emails. First of all, thank you to all of you that took the trouble to send me an email this week, filling me in a little bit about yourselves. I appreciate that. A number of people were interested to know when we're going to get around to this. Here is already a hint of it, although he doesn't get into it completely. Tikkun hamidot, improving yourself, improving your personality. Amnam hu ripui hanefesh v'kochoteha. So the Rambam says, what does it mean to improve yourself or to perfect yourself? It means to heal your soul and its characteristics is to heal your soul and its capacities. So already the Rambam introduces this idea, which he'll develop at length as we move along, that personality flaws, and personality flaws doesn't mean that you're a murderer or an arsonist. Or that you're Bernie Madoff or you're Adolf Hitler. Personality flaws can be much more minor cracks in an otherwise refined object. That healing personality flaws, perfecting personality flaws, is an act of rifuah. Now, it's not merely because he's a physician that he results to this language of ripui, of healing. For the Rambam, the connection, I think I mentioned this last time, the connection between the psychology, to use an anachronistic term, and the physical are very much connected. This is an idea that Western medicine broke with at a certain time, and it seems to me in the last number of years has started coming back to. כמו שהרופא אשר ירפא הגופות צריך שידע תחילה הגוף אשר ירפא הוא בכללו. Just like a doctor, a regular MD, right, a general practitioner, before he can heal physical maladies, has to undergo a course of anatomy. He has to understand all of the different components of the body, and their function, and how they work, and how they interact. And this is first-year medical school. Are there any doctors amongst us? Anybody here work in medicine? Nobody? How could that be? But, you know, we've all seen television. First-year medicine is you study anatomy. You study, you know, a doctor will study everything. And even if you get the idea without the MD, right, correct? You study anatomy. And even if you're going to become an eye doctor or an ear, nose, and throat man, you, Joel, what are you talking about? Even if you're going to be an ear, nose, and throat man, you have to do everything. You need to know how the little toe works, because it's all one grain. Now, part of that is the rigors of first year medical school. It's the process that you have to go through to separate the men from the boys, as it were. But it's also part of the sense of the Unitarian notion of how medicine works. Really, Joel, are you a doc? I mean, you studied medicine, or you have a medical degree? I did not know that. Well, that is really interesting. That is interesting. We have a lot of new people here, so I'll just take a moment to introduce our friend Joel Nowicki, who's with us, joining us from Poland, who's sending in these chats. Some of you are from boring places, and some of you are from more interesting places. But I guess what you consider to be boring or interesting has to do with where you're from. I guess if I was from Warsaw, being from northern Poland would not be so interesting. Alan is from Illinois, which is not interesting to anyone. So the Rambam says that just like an MD has to have a notion of the whole anatomy, v'chelkei haguf mahem, ritzoni lomar guf ha'adam tzarich sheyeda elu dvarim yachaluhu v'yirchakuk mehem. So you have to know what's going to make somebody healthy, what makes somebody well. Kain asher yirapeh hanefesh. So that's true also for the physicians of the soul. V'yirtze l'takein hamidot. So who's the physician of the soul? So later the Rambam will identify that. But interestingly here, he's talking about somebody that wants to improve themselves. So each of us has to be a physician of the soul. Or at least you have to be You have to be a paramedic of the soul. You need to have enough knowledge on how to do first aid, as it were, for your own nefesh. Tzarich sheyeda nefesh ha'adam bichlala uvachalakeha. You need to know the wholeness of the soul and the different component parts. Ma yechale ota? What's going to make it ill, God forbid? Uma yavri'o? And what will make it feel better? So that the Rambam is giving you his agenda. He's giving you the rationale for why this is important. If we want to talk about improving ourselves, so first you need an anatomy lesson. An anatomy lesson of the soul. But again, I called the shiur The Anatomy of the Soul. I think there's a book like that. I don't know the book. I haven't read it. But for the Rambam, the Anatomy of the Soul is again the analysis of the personality. So the Rambam says there are five components to the soul. He's going to come back and explain them one by one. So I'm going to skip that now. Kfar higdamnu bezeh haperek she dvarenu einam ela benefesh haadam. So we're talking about the human personality. It's interesting that for the Rambam is now talking generally. He doesn't say this is the Jewish soul, that in potential, the soul of all human beings have these powers. He'll later get into the question of the role of Torah and mitzvot to act as refining agents in helping to move things along. But right now, in principle, he's talking across the board, all of humanity. Ki koach hamazon, the first of the five components that we can eat, al derech mashal, asher la'adam, enenu koach hamazon asher la'chamor v'lasus. So he says, and here this is of course interesting, because the first, maybe I should not have skipped ahead. The first of the five components is the chelik hazan, the nutritive component of the soul. Now this is interesting because we would not think that this has to do with the soul or with the personality. But for the Rambam it does, for reasons that hopefully will become clear as we move along. But the Rambam says that this idea that you have to eat, that a person eats, how one eats, what one eats, these are all things that the halakha, for example, will have a lot to say about. We believe in eating. We're Jewish. That's what we do. Eating is, you know, that's what it's all about. But we don't eat everything, and we don't eat all the time, even though sometimes, like, if you ever go to a hotel, it seems like we eat all the time. But, you know, you're not in the hotel all the time, and there are days when we don't eat at all, and there are things that we don't eat after we've eaten other things, and generally, you know, we like to follow the motto of eat to live, not live to eat, to do so in moderation. So the Rambam says that this power, this component, this faculty, so it's something about us which is very animalistic. And if you've ever been to a hotel on Pesach, so it definitely looks very animalistic. But he says, at least in its ideal, when we do it, it's different than when the animals do it. That it serves, although biologically it might be the same thing, spiritually it's different. It's different than a donkey at the trough. Ki ha'adam nizon b'chelek hazan min ha'nefesh ha'enoshit. Because one of the five components of the personality is this idea that we have to sustain ourselves with nourishment. That it's the very delicate link, the imaginary fibers, as it were, that connects the physical part of me and the spiritual part of me. The idea that we have to eat. If you don't eat, you can't do anything. If you don't eat, you can't, like, function. So that idea that when we eat, it's we're eating, we're drinking in order to, you know, fuel the engine, the spiritual engine. So then that means it's different than when a donkey eats or when a dog eats. So it's different than when the donkey eats. It's different when the palm tree eats, right? Because plants also eat. They also consume food. V'amnam ye'omar al kol eila ha'ishim nizon. Right? Even though we use the same term to say, we'll say nourishment, right? That the plant needs nourishment, the donkey needs nourishment, and the person needs nourishment. B'shituf Hashem bilvad. It's merely, we're merely using it as a homonym. We don't mean, it's not the same thing. It's not the same thing when we say that I eat and a donkey eats. Because what's happening on the spiritual plane is completely different. Lo sheha inyan echad be'eno. They are not the same thing. When I eat and when the donkey eats, it's not the same thing. V'chein ye'omer al ish ha'adam u'bal ha'chayim margish. So the same thing with the second component. The second component, margish, which is the sensation that we can feel things, and that by feeling things, by taking in certain things through the senses, sight, hearing, smell, touch, taste, etc., that we take them in, very physical activities, but they're processed through the neshama, through the nefesh, to potentially have an impact on us in a way that feeds the soul. So when we say that, you know, I smelt it and the dog smelt it, or I saw it and the dog saw it, b'shituf Hashem bilvad, right? It's merely that we're using the same term to describe something. And it could be that chemically it's the same thing. It could be, I think that this is, if I remember, I mean, things may have changed since I last studied biology, but I think that they say that smell is one of the least understood senses of how it actually works, like how the molecules actually get turned into all of those neurons firing. Like vision is very, very, very complex. Like the bulk of our brains are used, or a very large bulk of our brains are used to process vision and images. And smell is much less complex, but we just simply don't understand the mechanics of it completely, and there are different theories for how it works. So it could be on the physiological side, when I smell something and when my dog smells it, physiologically, it's the same process. But in actuality, it's different. Lo shehahargasha asher beruvein hi hahargasha asher bezeh hasus. V'lo hahargasha asher bezeh hamin hi hahargasha be'eina asher bezeh hamin acher. So that when we taste, smell, feel, see something, when a human does it, it's different than when an animal does it. It's different than when an animal does it. Ela kol min v'min ma'asher lo nefesh, yesh lo nefesh achad zulat nefesh ha'acher, v'yitchayvu minefesh ze pulot, u'minefesh ze pulot, v'efshar shetidme pu'ula le'pu'ula. It could be that we can make comparisons between different activities of the soul, between this creature and that creature, but every creature is unique, and man the most unique of all. I know, of course, the word unique doesn't take a modifier, but you know what I mean. V'yechashev b'shtei ha'pu'ulot shehen davar echad be'eino, ve'en ha'davar cheinu mashalo, mashal shlosha mekomot chashuchim. So he says it's like a mashal to three dark places. Here, three rooms that are dark. Compared to the three types of species: plant, animal person. Echad mehem zercha alav hashemesh. One room has sunshine. Veheir. And the room is lit up through the sunshine. Vehasheni ala alav hayareach veheir. And the second has moonlight. Moonlight, of course, being merely a pale reflection of the sun through the darkness. Vaacher, the third room, hudlak bo ner veheir. And the third, so somebody turns on a candle, lights a candle, or turns on a light. In our modern, to modernize the example. So all three rooms could be said to be lit. All three rooms, the sunlight, the moonlight, and the candlelight, all three rooms can be said to be lit. Right? It would be fair to say that about all three rooms. But in reality, they're completely different. Not just the physics of it are different, but the quality is different. Not just the quantity of the light is different, but really there are three different things going on in each of those rooms. Even though in some ways they're alike, and we could talk about all three rooms being alike in a certain way, and we would say about each of them that they have light there, but you can't compare the light of a candle to the light of the sun. So the Rambam is saying the same thing, that when we talk, that we have to be careful about our language. For the Rambam, language is and getting it right and speaking precisely is very, very important. For the Rambam, when we talk about these things, about the components of the soul, we always stand in the danger of tripping ourselves up on our own language, because we talk about things in precise ways. That's the way vocabulary works. That's the way language works. And we, I don't know if any of you have pets. Here in my house, we have a lot of pets because my children are in charge. So we have a dog and we have a cat and we have all types of other furry things. And, you know, the animals, of course, take on a certain role in the family. And you tend to anthropomorphize them, which means that you tend to imagine human characteristics and personality traits, even though obviously animals also have personalities, but in a different way than people. So you tend to think about them or to filter their actions through your own experience, and you project human characteristics on them. And you talk about them in human terms, but that doesn't mean that they actually have those human characteristics. So that's part of the point that the Rambam is here making by way of introduction. Vehisig ze anyan shehu nifla ma'od yikashlu bo harbe. A lot of people make this mistake, the mistake that I just outlined, min ha mitpal safim. Many of the philosophizers make this mistake. V'yichayvu mize dvarim migunim v'deot biltei nichonot. And because of that, they draw improper conclusions and incorrect opinions. V'ashuv el kavanatenu b'chelek ha-nefesh v'omar. And now he gives you the outlines of the soul. Hachelek hazan. Again, there are five parts. The first is this nutritive component. Mimenu hakoach hamoshech v'hamachzik v'hamachel v'hadochem hamotarot v'hamigadel. This is, what do they call it? Nutrition 101. This is the part of your soul. You know, we think about soul. Soul is, you know, this Shabbos is Rabbi Shlomo Karlbach's Yahrzeit, or this week, or sometime they're having all these events here, right? So we talk about soul. So that's what you think about soul. You think about spirituality, and you think about singing and davening and etc. The Rambam's talking about having lunch. Right, Howard, you having lunch? Over there, it looks like, you know, not such a spiritual thing, but really it is. Really, for the Rambam, it is. Because for the Rambam, the unity of body and soul is the bedrock of his entire theory. So you can't neglect the body. That's why, I mean, we're going to get to it later in the work, the Rambam has this whole polemic against asceticism. Judaism, with very, very, very few notable, because they're exceptions, Judaism is not an ascetic religion. That's other religions. We don't believe in that. We believe in moderation. We believe in moderation. But we do not believe in asceticism, because the soul and the person and the body and the physical part of us is a part of us. It's the house for the soul. And just like if you let your house get run down and let the roof leak and the windows crack and the pipes burst, it's difficult to live there, so too with the body-soul connection. So the first, again, it's the first, it's the lowest, if there's indeed a hierarchy here, is the nutritive, that you have to maintain yourself, you have to digest, you have to, the body flushes out the waste products that are excessive, that don't give you the nutrient after it's taken the nutrients out. The body grows, it reproduces itself. Umavdil ha-lechot, again, for the Rambam in medieval medicine, the idea of the lechot, the humors, the different bodily fluids that had to be kept in proportion. Again, the Rambam is not a graduate of 20th century medical schools. Ad shi'afrish masherui lehizon bo masherui lidchoto. V'hadvarim al elu hashiva hakochot. These different capacities of, these sub-capacities of the... Right now, there's the nefesh. How many nefeshot does everybody have? One. That nefesh has five components to it. Each of those components is subdivided into other components. So these seven components of the nefesh hazan, uvamayif alu, ve'ech yifalu, uve'elo evarim mipu'ulatam yoter nir'et v'yoter gluya. So how it works, and why it works, and when it works, and where in the body it works, and some of it happens explicitly, and some happens implicitly. We don't know exactly what goes on when we swallow the sandwich, maybe, but it's all going on in there. Uma mehem nimtza tamid, uma yichle mehem bizman katsuv. Ze kulo kashur lemelechet harefuah. Says, I don't need to go into this in too great detail. This is the work of doctors. Not everybody needs to be a doctor. You need to know how to take care of yourself. But the chiddush here, the innovation here, is in a work that's principally concerned with personality theory and improving yourself and improving your midot, improving your personality traits. The Rambam starts off by saying, like your mother used to say, the most important thing is first have a healthy breakfast. First you have to have a healthy breakfast, and then you can start the day. So a little bit, that's what the Rambam is saying, right? Eat tatala, eat. Although the Rambam, of course, was not a Yiddish grandmother. But the idea being healthy body, healthy soul. And that these things are very much interdependent. So the first component of the soul is the physical. The second component, chelek hamargish, the sensitive soul, mimenu hakochot chamisha, and this has five components, which we all know, hamifursamim etzel ha'amon, right? This is well known. Sight, hearing, taste, smell, umishush, touch.
V'hu nimtza b'chol shetach haguf. The Rambam just points out a curios that the other four senses, sight, smell, hearing, and taste, are located in specific organs, but touch is your whole body is sensitive to touch. Why he makes this point about touch, but the point being that we have different components like radar, as it were, that help us take it all in. And if you think about it, again, particularly if you think about the Tefillah Zakah, I hope that some of you are familiar with Tefillah Zakah. If not, look in your Yom Kippur Machzor, the Yom Kippur prayer book. There was a Tefillah that was written in the 18th century, I think, called Tefillah Zakah. It's a special prayer that's meant to be said on Erev Yom Kippur. Some people come to shul a little bit early on Yom Kippur before Kol Nidre to recite Tefillah Zakah. And one of the themes there is this notion that the five senses. God gives us these five senses in order that we may improve ourselves, in order that we might, for the Jew certainly, that we might do mitzvot with them. And the Tefillah Zakah basically saying, but unfortunately, what do? We often corrupt ourselves. We have sight. Sight is, of course, the most, the most important of the senses. The thought of ever losing my eyesight is something that just petrifies me. Our whole interaction with the world is through sight. And, here in Israel, in Chalon, there's this museum, this blind museum. I don't know if any of you have visited there, but it's an extraordinarily powerful experience. They replicate what it's like to be blind. You go into a completely, completely dark series of rooms, and you're led by somebody who himself or herself, the guide, is also blind, and it gives you this very real sense of what life must be like, and it is so foreign to those of us that are, of course, blessed with sight. But what do we do with sight, says the Tefillah Zakah? Instead of using it to look at books and, to read Torah and whatever it is, we look at all types of other improper things. And that, of course, the Tefillah Zakah was written before there was an internet that has all types of things on it that you shouldn't be seeing, etc., etc., etc. So this idea, the second component, is related to the first, builds on the first, moves along. The third component, the koach, the chelek hamidameh, the imaginative soul, the power to imagine, is now we move from the more physical to the more esoterical, the more intellectual, rational, and we will come back next time and look at parts 3, 4, and 5, because they make up again. There are five components to the soul. The first two are a little bit more rooted on the physical side, and the third, the chelek hamidameh, the imaginative component of the soul, the chelek hamitorer, the appetitive component of the soul, that you can have desires, that you can have preferences, that you can make value judgments, that you're awake, right? That your personality is awake and it is engaged. And then finally, the fifth, the chelek hasichli, the rational soul, being the highest. These three, of course, go together, and we will explore them together when we meet next time, and we will finish the first of the 8 chapters, and hopefully we'll also begin the second of the 8 chapters. Let me just look at what are these one of these things here in the links. Oh, there's a picture of Joel Nowicki, a young, unbearded Joel Nowicki in medical school. Here's... Now, this is the... Alan, this is the Children's Museum. This is the Children's Museum, not the Blind Museum. That's a different museum.